Welcome to the show. I'm James.
I'm David.
I'm Riley.
And today we are discussing Forrest Gump. We'll laugh. We'll argue. The guy on the stage at the Washington Monument, he says it like that. Anyways, we'll laugh. We'll argue. We might get a little too into it, but at the end of the day, movies is as movies does.
Spoiler alert.
There's going to be a lot of Gumpisms in this.
This is so chaotic.
There's going to be a lot of Gump voice.
I love it.
Okay, spoiler alert. Next week, we are doing Uncharted. Fan of the games?
David
fan.
Is.
I am a big
yeah.
fan.
All I haven't right. played any of them.
Fan of Spider-Man?
Yep.
Same man. Okay.
Same character.
But today, it's Forrest Gump. David, what are you giving this movie out of 10?
For better or for worse, Forrest Gump closed the book on a more innocent epoch of cinema where simple sweetness trumped audience cynicism. Allow your heart to lead, and you're going to go places.
Okay.
8.6 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
I went there. I was worried that I wouldn't. This is a movie I've seen a million times. I didn't realize how many times I'd seen it until I was saying the lines
scene
in the movie before before they were happening.
Have you seen it as an adult?
I had. But like probably 4 or 5 years ago. And it wasn't a close watch. It was just like a put it on the background kind of thing. And it holds up. My heart felt things at the right moment. My brain started to interject at some moments, and I had to be like, shut the fuck up.
Forrest Gump holds up. Riley.
I had a couple moments like that, too. My only slogan is, I don't know much about movies, but I'd say this one is pretty good.
What? I don't think that's your best voice.
Hey! I have anxiety about doing this impression, because I'm like, a lot of people can do it, but I'm just going to do, I'm not going to try very hard.
Do you?
All right.
I'm giving it an 8.5 out of 10. I liked it. I don't know. I've definitely seen it at some point. I don't remember how far back, how many times I've seen it. It's been on TV. I don't know. But I enjoyed it. I think normally this is the type of movie that bothers me because it's very, it's linear, but it's very much like a sequence of things that are happening.
Yeah.
With not,
it's not a plot.
It's literal. It's a book adaptation.
It's not a hero's journey per se. But it's great. This is a slice of life movie sort of that I love.
Yeah. Not literal, literary. That's what I meant to say. Sorry, guys. Forrest Gump is a timeless and heartwarming movie that makes you think about your own values and approach to life. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay, what was that?
That was a half accent.
You're giving me crap.
Mama, you ain't gotta die. I was running. Okay, here we go, guys. I hope you like Forrest
what
Gump.
What was your score?
A 9 out of 10, baby.
Oh, heck okay, yeah. Let's
something
go.
Bit me. All right. Thanks for our sponsor, Storyblocks, for sponsoring today's show. Ever need a quick clip for a video, but you don't have the capacity or desire to make it yourself? Storyblocks helps you bring your stories to life without sacrifice to time, budget, or resource. There's over a million royalty-free assets for you to choose from, including 4K HD footage, Adobe templates, music, images, and a wide array of diverse and inclusive content. There are subscriptions for every budget, so you can choose the plan that works for you, from their unlimited all-access plan, which gives you unlimited video and audio downloads, to enterprise licensing for your entire company. You get access to assets that you need. What are you doing with your hands beside me?
Building up the story blocks.
Okay, you're just very distracting. We use story blocks here at LMG, and it's great. We love it. We use it a lot. You guys should use it too. Take your videos to the next level by checking out Storyblocks today at storyblocks.com/carpool.
Block it.
That's our old name.
Take a story and block it.
Thanks to Secret Lab for sponsoring today's episode. Their chairs are engineered to keep you comfortable for long hours at work and play. Their Titan Evo 2022 series chair offers 4-way lumbar support, comes with a magnetic memory foam head pillow that I'm smacking my cranium on right now. It's very soft.
Good.
And they're offered in different upholsteries, mother effa, like hybrid leatherette, soft weave fabric, and Napa leather. The official leather of the UFC. Just joking. It's a tradition at this point. With up to a five-year extended warranty and a 49-day return policy, you're covered if anything goes wrong. So learn more at Secret Lab. Learn more about them at lmg.gg/secretlabtjm. Got you there.
What does Napa have to do with the UFC?
It's just...
I don't watch fighting.
It's just... Napa is caps locked on this copy, and it just looks like NASCAR. It just... I don't know. Something about sponsors on clothing is... I get it in my head every time.
Okay.
We're also supported by Manscaped. The best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. You can shave your sack with it. It won't hurt you. You'll love it. The new wireless charging system removes the need to bring cables with you. Who needs that mess in their shaving bag? There's water involved
in down there.
Electricity is stupid. It should be wireless. This
Except
is great.
For the vast deference.
The Lawnmower 4.0 includes ceramic blades and skin-safe tech to reduce nicks and cuts, and protect your Cowper's gland. It's cordless, waterproof. It gets 90 minutes of use on a full charge. You can get all the way to the taint. You know that people's taints are shrinking generation by generation? Head to manscaped.com/TJM20 and get 20% off and free shipping today. How short is yours?
Wait, is that for real?
Yeah, it is. Anyways.
How do they have data?
Head to findthetruth.com to find out more about
where are they measuring like babies as they come out and like, oh, that's a shorter taint.
You're not?
What's the other chode? Is the other word for that?
No, I thought that's a different
gooch.
Thing.
Gooch.
No, that's not.
Gooch is taint.
I feel like all of these words are like kind of.
They're all fashion brands.
Cheswick. All right, guys. What is up?
In my new Gooch bag.
How about the feather? Let's start with that feather.
Feather.
The what?
It's the era of opening credits.
Yeah.
Oh, you have your synopsis.
It leads perfectly into the synopsis. It's a shorter one, guys.
Let's hear it.
Forrest Gump, a man from Greenbow, Alabama, with an IQ of 75, sits at a bus stop and tells a series of strangers about his life. Forrest describes being raised by a single mama, meeting his best friend Jenny, and discovering an almost supernatural affinity for running. He recounts saving his commanding officer, Lieutenant Dan, in Vietnam, but failing to save his friend... Vietnam?
Back in Nam.
But failing to save his friend Bubba. He chronicles his ascent to the pinnacle of ping pong stardom, earning enough money to fulfill Bubba's dream of opening a shrimping business, through which he employs the struggling Lieutenant Dan and makes himself a millionaire. Through all of this, he pursues a relationship with Jenny, but she insists on forging her own exciting yet destructive path. While staying at his home one day, Jenny finally admits to Forrest that she loves him, and they sleep together. But the next day, she leaves once again, leaving Forrest alone. Then, for what he says is no reason at all, he starts running and doesn't stop until about 3 years later, after going from coast to coast multiple times and attracting a cult-like following.
Pretty tired.
Not think I'll go home. In the present day, Forrest finally reunites with Jenny, who reveals she has been raising their son, also named Forrest. Also, she has what is probably AIDS. The two finally get married, and Lieutenant Dan comes to the wedding, but Denny, they go to Denny's and have breakfast. But Jenny dies shortly thereafter. Forrest sends Forrest off to school as the same feather that floated down at the beginning of the movie floats away at the end of the movie, and that's it. That was hard.
I was running! All right, that feather, though.
Oh.
That feather. This movie.
So it's thematic, isn't it?
Yes.
Go ahead.
At the beginning of my viewing, first viewing as an adult, by the way, I could probably recite the whole movie, but, you know, when you're a kid, you don't get stuff.
No.
I was like, what's the deal with the feather? And then by the end of the movie, I was like, so obvious.
Well, they also, like, when he's talking to her at her grave, he says explicitly, like, I don't know whether it's that we have a destiny or whether we're just all floating around accidental-like on a breeze. And I'm like, there it is.
I was pretty smart halfway through the movie when I was like, wow, him and Lieutenant Dan are just opposites, you know? This guy thinks his life has a plan and he has a destiny. It's all worked out.
Right.
Whereas Forrest is just goes with the flow and it all works out.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Well, maybe that's a pro of the movie, that it knew where you would get and it slowly reveals that later. Like, we talk about that where, like, the perfect revelation of information is where you think you're ahead of the movie, but you're just on track for what the movie
that's
wants.
That's really satisfying to you.
Yeah.
What I don't understand, though, is is there a compromise? Like, he doesn't really appear to change, really, in this movie as a protagonist. I don't think he changes much. Because I would think if Lieutenant Dan is super, let's say, destiny-driven, and then he's super go-with-the-flow and, like, intuition-driven, you'd think that both extremes would be bad, and in the end, Forrest, there would be, like, a compromise, and that would ultimately bring him happiness. But I don't really think that happened.
Yeah, I feel like Forrest is less of a traditional protagonist in the sense that he learns something and changes, but it's more that he's like a force in
the
movie
affecting others.
That has effects on others. And I think that
that movie Powder. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah, I haven't really either, but people will know what I'm talking about. People will know what I'm
Wait,
talking
is
about.
Wait, is that a documentary about snowboarders?
No, it's like this guy, he's like hairless and he's really white and he has some kind of strange powers.
Oh.
We got to do Powder, guys.
Sure.
Okay.
It's
Darth Vader, isn't it?
Also, like the Joker, you know, unstoppable force.
Oh.
Forrest Gump is the Joker.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Dan is Batman.
The different universe.
Powder, 50% Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I got to say that, like, I think this was probably my first time actually watching it, like, seriously as an adult. And, I didn't get any of that. Like, I don't remember any of these themes about, like, destiny or kind of going with the flow or whatever, like how to live life, different ways of doing it. And I thought it was beautiful that, I mean, we'll get into like whether it's cringe for like Tom Hanks or a Hollywood actor to play like a mentally disabled person, basically. But I thought it was like
and
a beautiful.
I'm quoting here. You never go full retard.
Yeah. Yeah.
End quote.
End quote.
It's
hey,
a
Robert.
Did this start that trope? Wait, we'll get into that. First off, just I want to lay it out. It's beautiful how his lack of higher intelligence gives him sort of a purity of focus and thought that allows him to be so successful and allows him to like stay on his path of mm-hmm. like I'm just doing what I'm doing, and while you know he's not burdened by these higher order more complex thoughts where people like have these crazy anxieties and they like get caught up in things. And
yeah, but it's interesting because it's like he lives completely principled. Mm-hmm. His life is completely principled, but in a way that's just intuitive to him. It's not like he wrote like a treatise right. on like liberalism or something like that. Yeah. He just knows what the right thing to do is, and and he'll do it. And then that bears fruit, whether that's running into a napalm
right.
stricken forest. He'll go forest. He'll run back in there five times to get Bubba.
Yeah,
even though he might die.
But and that's
his just
mama.
The right thing to do.
That's his mama. That's a good what'd you call that?
Mentor?
That's a good...
Mama.
What do you call that? Childhood?
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's like he was raised up right by his mama, you know? Yeah. She was a single mom, but she... Like, I love that he's like, you know, mama had a way of explaining things so I understand them.
Yeah. That's Bill Clinton.
I did not. It is.
Does not
it?
Have relations with Jenny.
I love my mama.
Random fact. The previous movie that Sally Field and Tom Hanks had worked together, they were romantically involved. And then they worked together on this, and it was mother and son. And
interesting.
It was, weird.
Well, but she was like she, how
Sally
old were
Field?
They? They're around the same age?
No, she's older than him.
Oh, okay.
But not like significantly.
But they aged her up, obviously.
Yeah.
Man, did you know he won Best Actor 2 years in a row?
For Philadelphia than this?
Yeah.
Huh.
This movie won everything, man. Best Adapted Screenplay, Best VFX.
Yeah, it's got some good VFX. Man.
What?
Yeah, there's
this
some great
Robert Zemeckis,
effects.
Right? So when did Futurama?
Yeah, we should talk about Robert
Back to the Future,
Zemeckis
88?
For a second.
Back to the Future was groundbreaking. Was it the second one where they've got that scene where Marty, like old Marty, is passing, handing things over to the young Marty? And they have
must
to...
Must be two. 85. It must be two.
What year did that come out?
Because
if 80, you...
Yeah, part two is 89.
All right.
Part one is 85.
Great. So this is 94 or something. So, okay. So Zemeckis already had all these skills with force perspective and rotoing stuff out.
Yeah, he was a big sci-fi kind of fantasy guy, and this was his first more serious movie.
But you could see it won Best VFX.
Yeah.
But they're so subtle.
Yeah.
They're so awesome. Like,
and the legs are phenomenal. Yeah. There's a couple times where if you're like looking for it, you can see the edges. But that first time the legs are revealed where he's lying on the bed and like... You're like, oh, his legs are just like sticking below the bed or whatever, and they just lift him up, and he has no legs.
They
and you're
show
like,
off.
They're like,
movie.
Oh yeah, they're doing this.
I paused it at one point. I had to. I paused it, and I did a little mansplain to my sister. I was watching it with. It's not. I was just explaining. He's on the floor after the New Year's debacle at his place, and he's lying on his belly. He flips onto his back, and then he does a 180.
Yep.
And when he does a 180. There is a table in the room that is in the path of where his legs, if he had full-length legs, they would have hit that table.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second. I pause it. I'm like, that is a flex. That table's not in the room.
Yeah.
They place that table to make your brain think that this is real because his legs would have hit it. And when you do that, you can actually see the edge of that table does look weird and unnatural.
Yep.
Like, you can tell they cropped it in.
It's the same. They do that, I think, is a really effective technique when... Lieutenant Dan's on the shrimp boat, and he's kind of having a spiritual moment where he's finding peace, and like the sun, the clouds clear, and there's the sun, and he looks at Forrest. He's like, I'm gonna fly or whatever, and he swings his legs off the boat.
Yeah,
and the way they did it is like it's perfect.
His body can't,
his body
mechanics of mechanic how his legs
is
move
perfect because if you had real legs, like they wouldn't be able to swing past. But what they did is they cut a hole out of the boat so that his legs could just swing through it, and then
really?
They added that chunk back.
What?
So it's so smart. It's so simple. But it's just those little extra thoughts that make the CG in this movie just like, ooh, it's good.
And it is CG.
Yep.
Like, because this is 1994.
Computer. This computer's
the year after Jurassic Park. Or
sure. Yeah,
I think it was 1993.
Sounds about right.
Well, do you mean, wait, CGI? Wait, sometimes the G means generated,
doesn't
it?
Yes, it's computer generated.
Wait, let's break this down.
Hold on.
Computer graphics intense.
What about this? When he's running out of the jungle holding like Bubba, there's napalm strikes right behind him.
So the napalm strikes are real. That's just composited.
Yeah,
that so that one
pretty,
didn't look as good.
I could
but
tell that.
They actually did do that napalm strike scene, and they spent like a full day rehearsing, getting it all ready, all perfect. And then they're like, okay, we're doing it. They go, they do the explosion. And then after they're done, they're all cheering. And Robert Zemeckis walks out of the bathroom and he's like, what happened?
He missed it.
And so he missed it and he was mad.
Oh. I gotta say though, some of those, like, one thing I didn't really have time to put it in the synopsis, but like there are all these cutaways where he's meeting the president and meeting famous figures and stuff, and
yeah,
it's
like
on TV.
Real archival films.
Yeah, those looked so bad.
The mouth. I think like the compositing is fine. It's just always the president mouth. The way it moves just looks so like.
And I guess they just tried
stretchy.
To like cut out footage of a mouth talking and put it on the historical figure, and it always looks so weird. It looks like when AI algorithms try to recreate images.
Yeah.
Actually, didn't bother me. I didn't, maybe, I don't know, because I've seen it so many times, maybe I'm just looking in weird spots, but I didn't notice that at all.
Oh,
the one
man.
Thing I did notice now that I'm older watching it was the first composite they did like that with the archival footage was when they're having segregation at the schools.
Oh, yeah.
And then it shows Forrest Gump in the crowd.
Yeah.
And they just hang on his face forever, being like, oh, look at that. He's not supposed to be there. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and they don't quite match the quality of the image of him and like the rest.
He's
it's
a
like
little
close.
Overexposed compared to...
Yeah, it's just a little bit different.
But it just seemed like they lingered on it just for the audience to sizzle in it and be like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing that.
Well, this wasn't a cheap movie. It was $55 million. And I mean, like, that's not an exorbitant amount of money, but for a movie like this, you don't really think about it, but there's so much production that goes into it. Although they did shoot most of it right on the park that they built the house on. Like, Vietnam.
Oh.
Vietnam is just across the street from the house.
And that house is so dope. The lane going to his house with a tree,
beautiful.
The trees going over it just for like a mile.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
awesome.
Feel like one of the great strengths of this movie is just the many different vignettes that it's able to, like, it almost like reproduces different genres of movies. Like, mm-hmm. we have a Vietnam War movie. We have like a Jaws-esque, like battling a storm situation out at sea. We have cultural revolution, the hippies and like they're fighting against the government. Like there are a bunch of like little mini genres of movies in this movie, and I appreciate that.
Totally. Well, they do a really good job tying it all together with the core of the movie, which is the romance to Jenny.
Yeah. Is this a romance?
It is, sort of. If you had to
it's
choose
a drama.
Something. Yeah.
The drama.
Yeah. Because I was thinking about this and I'm like, yeah, the core of the movie is Forrest and Jenny. And, like, they do eventually end up together. So I'm like, is it a romance? But it's not really.
It's not a romance because it's not
it's
a
more about
dual
him.
Story. It's
yeah.
his story.
Mm-hmm. Although I do find her story maybe more interesting than his.
Yes
what?
And no.
Not more interesting, but equally. I feel like there's a lot to say about her. But we should probably talk a bit more about him.
She's
first.
Definitely having her own movie. Her life could be a movie, which is great, and you only get those glimpses into it.
You know what it is? It's the contrast of him living this incredibly simple existence of like I am focused on this, and like it's not even that like he has goals in his life that he's working to achieve. He is like a good person, and he treats people with respect, and he tries to do the right thing, and. If something catches his attention and he finds out that he's good at it, he pursues that like with all of his being, and that ends up leading him to a place of success. Whereas she's looking for something, she's looking for purpose, she's looking for destiny, and she goes out there and makes a bunch of mistakes and wrong decisions and meets up with bad people, and it like screws her up even more because she was abused as a child, and that plays into it as well. But like you know, she almost commits suicide. And she realizes that, oh, Forrest has this purity, has this like focus and intention for the right things, and I've been following the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that contrast.
I love that kind of theme about what really matters, what matters in life, and what matters in a partner.
Mm.
What do I really need if you're Jenny?
Yeah.
Although I do find it frustrating that she... Like, how she treats Forrest. And, like, yeah, she has a lot of trauma and pain. But I'm like, you don't deserve Forrest. Forrest is, like, too dumb to realize how terrible you are to him. But, like, the fact that she shows up when she needs something and then just disappears and constantly is in this cycle of, like, playing games with him. And it's just, like,
I don't see her as that villainous. What do you mean? Say more about what do you think is kind of like damaging.
It's not quite villainous.
What are the dick moves that she does?
It's the disappearing, like without a word, and just like appearing when she wants something from him and just disappearing when she's done, when she's taken her thing.
I wouldn't say she is an asshole, but she's acting like an asshole. I wouldn't say it's malicious.
I don't think it is malicious. Yeah. It's just that's all she knows how to do is to run away.
Yes.
She's
damaged.
Time? Are you talking about the time where she goes to like his? They make love and then she pieces out in the early morning light. That's the most heartbreaking one.
That's definitely one of them. But there's a couple times.
Honestly, right until the end, she's like, she doesn't ever really explicitly say, like, I made a mistake. Like, you could argue that she gets with him at the end because she is like, I had your baby.
Yeah.
And I know you're rich now.
And
I have HIV.
I have nothing. No other options.
I need someone to take care of us.
Yeah.
Like, that's a cynical reading of it. But, like, the movie isn't very explicit about the fact that she, like, really comes around at the end.
No.
It's just kind of like, well, you know, she did the right thing and she came back to him. Yeah. But even then, it's like a little shitty because he comes to see her and she's like, oh, because she sent him a letter.
Yeah.
And so then he comes to see her and she's like, that's your son. And that was supposed to be a nice moment, and it was sort of, but there was this undercurrent of, I'm like, wow, still a dick move.
Well, it's interesting because there's definitely a cynical reading of it where you're like, wow, she's just bringing him here so that he can parent the kid and take care of her and do all these things.
Right.
But I think because the movie is from his perspective, I'm willing to just like give her the benefit of the doubt in that situation where it's like she's finally realizing what is important. And that's her arc is like, oh, she knows that Boris might not have been the person she was looking for her whole life, but she's the person he needed.
Yeah.
And eventually she gets there. And like, I think there is a reading that certainly from his perspective where she's finally like realizing how deeply she does love him.
Right.
I think a lot of people can relate to having a certain checklist of things that you think you need in a partner. And especially if you get older and let's say you're in your 30s and you haven't settled down yet, you kind of start to reevaluate those things and be like, do I really need her to be a Star Wars fan? For Jenny, it's more like, you know, he never hurts her. He's consistent. He's stable.
Yeah.
He's unconditionally in love with her.
Right.
Those things matter more than, you know, if he can have like a cool conversation about socialism and NFTs.
Every single action he does around her is to protect and show his love. It's mostly to protect her. Like at the strip club, I love that scene where the guy throws the drink at her and he like just without hesitation walks up to her, starts fighting him.
He beats so much ass. I know, he's in this movie.
I love hesitation.
Yeah. I know the communist dude just like hits her and he's like you just see the fire in his eyes. Like I love all those scenes, full force. Like I'm gonna defend Jenny to my last breath.
Man, he really did deserve best actor. He does so much with his face in this movie.
Yeah. And he
even though he's like he's got just like this mask of nothing most of the time,
but he doesn't overdo it.
The nuance
like,
is there.
I think it's phenomenal. And the voice, it could have gone any which way. And there's like a million ways to make fun of the voice, but like it hits that sweet spot. And apparently, he didn't really have the voice until a kid that plays Forrest came on, and he just studied him because he had kind of a
the child
for Forrest. So he studied that kid and got his cadence for speaking, and that's where
more about that kid? Because I wrote
Haley Joel Osment?
No. Child Forrest, not Forrest's child.
Okay, I was like...
Because I wrote down, like, is the kid Forrest...
doing an impression.
...a bad actor, and that's it? Or is he a good actor...
I think he's just acting a kid in a
role.
He's beside other kid actors, and they're
more natural. Yeah, he's kind of stilted and weird.
Well, he is, but that's Forrest.
That's what I'm wondering. Is he playing the character, or is he just like, hey, that kid sucks at acting, let's get him?
I don't think that he sucks. I think he's just he has a weird way of talking, and they recognize that, and they're like, perfect.
I think they cast him because... Because
I've seen interviews of him as an adult, and he seems like he communicates normally. Like, he doesn't seem like he has, like, a disability
or anything.
You've
seen interviews with the kid who played Forrest Gump in this?
Yeah, he's in the Netflix, the movies that made us. He's in it.
Oh, interesting.
Just for like a second, because he doesn't have much to say.
Does he have an accent?
No.
Oh, okay.
But he,
that's
he,
all I have
he
to say
did.
About
I'm
that.
A real life Forrest
he might,
Gump.
He might have like a really mild accent, like, but it's pretty internationalized.
Right. Yeah.
But I like the kids. I think they are very charming. When him and Jenny are doing their things as kids, I feel for it. Man, when Jenny doesn't want to go home and like that when it's like slowly kind of revealed what her dad is doing. Oh man, my blood boils.
I love how the movie contrasts like Forrest's innate goodness with all of the like horrible stuff going on in the world.
And the movie's classy about it. Like it's like it never feels like it's taking the easy route by cashing in on the excessive drama that's going on. Like, with the dad, it's like you just see him come out and you hear Boris talk about how he's an affectionate man, loves kissing and touching. And, like, but you don't have, like, the, like, horrible scene. Same with, like Jenny when she's dying. Like, you know she's dying, but you don't have, like, a bunch of gratuitous scenes of her, like, being emaciated, thank you. And, like, getting paler and losing her hair or, like, whatever.
It's unnecessary.
You don't need it, and you just get this the kind of sweet emotional version of it, and it's nice as a movie experience outside of, like, the thematic anything. Just, like, the experience of, like, enjoying this movie, it's a lot easier.
Yeah. I love when they reveal, like, the wisdom that he still has. You know, like, even in being who he is, when he said, sometimes there's just not enough rocks.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
like...
Yeah.
Wow.
But like, it's but it's great because it's like, in that moment, it's such a great line because he says stuff like that throughout the movie where you can tell that he sort of gets it, but it's almost like he's not getting it. Like he thinks that the problem was that there weren't enough rocks, and if there were only more rocks, then she could take down the house or
on
something.
On that particular instance, I don't think so. Yeah. In that one, I think like he just actually isn't.
Right.
A middle-aged, like, he just has wisdom.
Right.
In other lines, like, my favorite line from the movie, I feel like it's underrated, even though I have no sense of that because I never talked to anyone else about this movie. But I feel like one of the best lines ever is when he finds out that he's really rich from the Apple investment.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, Dan said we didn't have to worry about money anymore. I thought, great.
That's
one less thing. Yeah. That is the funniest line in the whole movie. Yeah. Oh, one less thing. Just money. Just only money.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God, that's hilarious.
No, it's great. And then I think he
that's an
that
example
up.
Of what you're talking about.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
Even get
yeah, he doesn't understand that, like, for other people, this is their reality that they're dealing with, but he just doesn't even have to really deal with that reality of, like, worrying about money because to him, it's just another thing. It's not like money has this special thing, special.
I guess, like, so many aspects of his life are hard and complicated. So it's
The simple stuff to other people is like what he actually has to worry about, I guess. And
it's weird that he's like oddly privileged, but also marginalized. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that kind of makes it, it's almost like a bit of a cheat to make like a interesting protagonist where it's like, okay, he's dumb and he like struggles in life, but at the same time, he does have a supportive mom who raised him right, and he does have, you know, some money, and he never really, like, struggles. He's never on the street, you know. He joins the military. He's, like, taken care of
in that regard. Like, certain superpowers. Like, he's an adult with an intellectual disability. As a child, he had a mobility issue. But then that turns into the opposite of that. He's so damn fast. So then
and
he lives in a society that values that, so he gets to go to college from based on that.
Right.
And then he has, like, random army superpowers, like, putting guns together quickly. And
But that makes sense
to
me.
Well, that's his focus.
Yeah, that's exactly. He's a simple man. He has no distraction. It's like when he has a task, he just does it.
His mind is just like quiet.
Yeah.
Just tumbleweed.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He's unburdened by all the extra stuff.
I love when the drill sergeant's yelling at him. He's like, what is your purpose? He's like, to do whatever the hell you tell me.
Whatever you tell me.
That's the smartest answer. You must be a goddamn genius.
I love those scenes. How did you do that? How did you put that gun together so fast, Gump? You told me to, sir. That's fucking fantastic.
I love it.
And then on the money thing, though, where he says, Mama said there's a certain amount of money a man needs and the rest is for showing off. And I was like, that is perfect. It just goes along with the character so well. Yeah. And he, like, donates a bunch.
Yeah, and then the next shot is putting a fancier steeple on a church. Yeah, showing off. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he gave it to them. He made the hospital. He gave it to Bubba's mom.
Oh,
like,
that's
just,
such a
like,
good shot, too, because you've seen, like, when he was talking about Bubba's family, you see the ancestors of Bubba, like his mom, grandma, whatever,
serving the
shrimp to the slave owners or like the white people. And then there's just that one shot where it's reversed and a white lady serves her the shrimp and you're just like, yeah here we go.
And she's also, she's wearing like African clothes and stuff. Yeah.
I love that.
This movie won best editing as well. And
well, I
love those cuts where like Lieutenant Dan family had served in every single war and it's the same actor.
Yeah.
And then it just cuts through all those different time periods. That was, it's kind of like when you watch like The Big Short for the first time or something.
Ooh,
that's unconventional.
Yeah.
This is wacky. They deserved it.
There's so many neat things in this movie. And, like, it could have gone wrong in so many ways. Like, I didn't realize that this movie is... The original pitch for this movie is what made Rain Man.
Is that right?
Oh,
yeah.
Rain Man.
Yeah, because, like, the story was based as, like, it's, like, the author, Winston whatever, heard of a story of, like, an autistic savant who, like, never could do anything and then got in front of a piano and was a genius.
Mm.
And so he wrote a... They wrote kind of stories off of that, and they pitched
Winston Groom.
They pitched an idea of like an autistic man who was like a genius at a certain thing, and that became Rain Man. And Forrest Gump kind of got stuck as an alternate version for 10 years. And it took like three different studios competing and canceling it and doing it. At its core, it's really simple. It's just like make a really likable protagonist, have him go through these extraordinary things, and you just cheer for him every turn. There's never a moment in this movie where you're not like, I don't want him to succeed in the most extraordinary way.
Yeah. It's because he has a childlike innocence.
Yeah.
He's purely good.
And you still get the conflict because he comes up against people who are dealing with their own issues, and he's kind of like reflecting back at them, this purity or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like having him as this always good person doesn't detract from the movie, because it's just like, it takes a second though to be comfortable with the fact that, okay, he's moving through life, he's the constant, and everything else around him is shifting, and like we're learning stuff about humanity and these other characters, not necessarily more about Forrest, because you know him.
Yeah, he's the same as when he was a kid.
Yeah. I love Lieutenant Dan.
Oh,
because
yes.
He thinks that he gets it before Jenny gets it, you know, and like we've argued that maybe Jenny doesn't get it right till the end, but like, did he did that touch you? Did that story touch
you? For sure.
Lieutenant Dan shows up and he's like, I said if you ever bought a fishing boat, then I'd be your first mate. Well, I'm a man of my word.
Yeah.
I like the visual progression, actually, with him and Jenny. They both have these visual progressions where you have Lieutenant Dan in the army.
Yeah.
Then you have him when he shows up in a wheelchair, and he has the long hair, and it's very
outside
greasy.
The talk show.
He's very unkempt. Yeah. And then he goes away, shows up at the fishing boat. He still has the long hair, but it's shampooed. And then later at the wedding, then he's clean cut again.
Yeah.
And it's like just more and more like clarity. And you see the same thing with Jenny when by the time, you know, she's got the short haircut and she's wearing her uniform because she has a steady job now.
Yeah.
And she's a mom now.
This just looks cleaner and better put together. Mm-hmm. But I want to stick on Lieutenant Dan, because like, even just like the thought of him walking up at the wedding makes me emotional.
Yeah.
Like it's such a, it's like just a sweet moment of like seeing how far Forrest's love and unconditional friendship brought him.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, like this whole movie is full of that, where you're just like, I'm always on the verge of like emotional overload,
right?
But like it just feels so fucking good. This movie's so satisfying to watch.
Yeah.
And it's like they just figured out the formula like to manipulate my brain and my heart at just like the right
and
frequency. Oh, it's so good.
And it's so funny because like Forrest doesn't set out to help people, right?
Yeah.
Like he sets out to just go his way in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he pursues his...
That's why it's inspiring.
Yeah.
Because when Lieutenant Dan's like, they gave you the goddamn Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
Well, why did he get it? Because he ran back in to get his friend. Because he promised, right? And then...
Right.
Just like he promised to run the shrimp boat.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So then if Lieutenant Dan, who cares so much about that medal, actually sits back to reflect and goes, why the hell did he get it? He has to go, well, if I want to succeed like Forrest is succeeding, then I have to honor my promise to be his first mate.
Right.
Because I said I would, and that's what Forrest would do.
Right.
And that ultimately is his path to redemption.
Yeah. I think that there's also an element, like, that's all very, very true. I think that there's also an element of, like, selfishness versus selflessness. Because, like, he said that he'd go back and get Bubba, but at the same time, like, would Forrest not run back into the jungle to get people if he hadn't made that promise to Bubba? I feel like he still would, you know? And
he was specifically going for his best friend.
He Bubba. was, and he was trying to find Bubba, but I'm just saying that, like, in any situation Forrest is presented with, he has his own goals and motivations, but at the same time, he's like, if someone asks for help or if someone needs help, he doesn't hesitate to help or to protect Jenny or to, you know, it's not just about what he wants, although he does pursue what he wants first and foremost. He goes where the path leads him, but he's not sitting out there to be like, I'm gonna go help people. He's getting out there and like living his own life, and along the way he doesn't think twice about acting selflessly in order to help somebody.
Well, I think maybe that's one of the brilliant aspects of the script, is that the movie puts him in all these insane situations where he gets to be his best self, and it feels like a natural extension of him. It doesn't feel like it's like these scenarios just exist to make him look good. It's like, but when you think about it, maybe if you transplanted Forrest Gump into other scenarios, he wouldn't always do the right thing, but in this movie he never makes a mistake,
right?
Like, really.
Well, they have a conflict at New Year's when they're with those women.
Yeah, but it never feels
it's not like he's like, oh, like you said, he follows his goals first and foremost. So it's not like he's going, I'm in a social situation where I'm supposed to have sex with this lady even though I don't want to.
Right.
He just, your mouth like tastes like cigarettes.
Yeah.
It ruins the whole party. Right. But like, because he's true to himself.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Good time to mention, writer of this movie, the screenwriter, Eric Roth, legend. He's,
oh, yeah.
He wrote Dune.
What?
Wow. He did the Dune screenplay.
Wait, which one?
What?
The new one?
Yeah. He's like a living legend. He's like one of the most decorated screenwriters alive. He's like in his 70s now, I think.
Oh, well, I've never heard of him. That's embarrassing a little bit.
I mean, that shows you how good he is.
He's only got 27 credits.
I mean, just Forrest Gump and Dune are pretty fucking big. Yeah.
The Postman. Munich.
Yeah. Apparently, in one of the interviews I saw, Tom Hanks was supposed to be the main character in The Postman. And then Kevin Costner came in and was like, I'm going to be the main character, and shifted the movie and made it an absolute piece of crap.
Why did he have the power to do that?
Because Kevin Costner was like
did
top
he direct
of the world.
It? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Top of the water world. And
top of the water world. The time,
eh? Oh, I don't even know. I've never seen The Postman.
It sucks.
A nameless
man,
drifter.
Tom Hanks is fantastic. He just is so likable. Like, he's a very skilled actor, but I can't imagine a human being that I want to cheer for more than him.
It's funny because I feel like I'm so jaded about Tom Hanks now. Like, when Tom Hanks does like a project now, he's done so much.
Yeah, like when I see him playing Disney or something, I'm like, nah, cares.
Yeah, you almost like forget that part of like the reason why he's a household name and why he's done so much work throughout his career is because he had these like iconic roles. Big.
I never saw that one, but that's
it's a little bit. It's a little bit weird.
Yeah, but then this one, and he's been in a bunch of other movies. Yeah. I just mean that, like, he
Castaway.
Saving
Private Ryan.
Yeah. I mean, I thought those were like a little bit later in his career, but like, well, middle. You forget having seen him so often and being so used to him that like, oh, he is an amazing actor.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched this like Apple TV Plus thing because they were advertising it a lot, where he's like, it's a post-apocalyptic thing, and he's got a robot and a dog.
What's that show called,
Risk?
I don't even remember what it's called, and it doesn't even matter. It's on Apple TV Plus.
It's
okay. It was all right. I didn't really finish it.
Finch.
New Tom Hanks.
I watched it in chunks, and I didn't really finish it. I was watching it with like my baby. And
cool story, dude.
Anyways, I'm just saying that movie, I was kind of like, that's Tom Hanks. Like, it's just like he's just doing, I'm an actor. They paid me to do this role. And in this one, you watch it and you're just like, oh, yeah, Tom Hanks is badass. He's
making a name for himself here, man.
Yeah.
Apollo 13, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Hell we should do that. I love that movie.
Oh, really? We should do that one.
Hey, what do you think of this movie with when his mom at the beginning says to him, I thought this was going to be like a major thematic element of the movie. She says, you're the same as anyone else. And I wondered, is that a setup? Because I knew that throughout the movie, maybe he's going to demonstrate, you know what? You're not the same as everyone else. You are different, but it's not a negative. You're different in the best way.
Yeah.
But I don't think that really...
See, what's funny is that...
...ever came to be.
That line comes the scene right after she says, if God... it's okay that you're different. If God wanted us all to be the same, he'd make us all have braces on our legs. And then the next
scene...
That
was skilled mothering right there.
Yeah. And then the next scene, she's like, you're the same as everyone else. I'm like, wait, so that's a little confusing, but like... In context, it obviously makes sense. It's just like different ways of framing it. But I just thought that was like an interesting directorial choice to have those scenes be right after each other. Because obviously he's not the same as everyone else.
No.
But I think that she's teaching him not to view his disability as like a true handicap. It's like it's not going to stop you from being successful, from helping people, from being a good person, from having an impact on the world.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
That was so dope when his principal was like, your mama sure does care about your education, son. And he's like,
he's actually sick burn.
That's such a burn.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
There are definitely, there's some moments like that where I'm like, that's almost like too smart. I would like, I wouldn't expect this character to do something that's that smart.
But
it doesn't happen that
often.
But
it's perfect because it's like, he's just grunting like a monkey. Like, it's to me, it's believable he knows that it's like, laughable, but he can't communicate any other way.
Yeah,
so it works for me.
I love that his response to like, "What are you stupid or something?" and he says, "Stupid is as stupid does." But I was like,
"What does that mean?"
It doesn't. It's not really a response in any way. It's just like, it's like something he's heard, so he repeats it.
But
does it come from Eric? What's the writer's name?
Roth.
His mom would say, "Handsome is as handsome does," and I think it's like a fake it till you make it kind of line where it's like, if you act handsome, people will think you're handsome.
Yeah, so I'm guessing it's like it's your behavior.
Oh, yeah.
It's about your behavior.
Meaning that a person should be judged by his actions, not his appearance. As in, like, if I'm stupid, you'll see me act stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But
Look how good I am at ping pong, though.
Stay pressed, because I ain't acting stupid.
What does that mean?
Stay pressed?
Yeah, explain that to me.
I'll Google that for you.
I'll let someone else say this. Dude, I almost cried four times watching this last night.
When are the times you cry?
When he says, I gotta find Bubba.
Yeah, that gets me too.
Gotta find Bubba.
When he's in Washington and then she runs into the lake.
Yep, same.
When he sees Little Forest and he goes, he's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I have a kid.
Yeah. So. I think the moment in that scene that got me was when he almost cries and he's like, is he like me?
Yeah. His first thought is to be worried. Yeah, that got me. Yeah.
I was like, oh, he's so sweet.
That is really.
He's smart, Forrest. He's so smart.
That's a really interesting line, dude. It reveals that has a self-awareness.
Yeah.
And that despite all of his successes, and his successes are directly attributable to his
simplicity
and his personality and his makeup.
Well, I
yet he doesn't wish that upon his son.
I wouldn't say that they're directly. I mean, I think that in his mind, and I think it's true. No, like everyone would probably think this. Like he succeeded despite his disability. Like in some ways, it is a benefit. Like I was saying, you know, like he has this simplicity of thought. He has this purity, this focus, discipline that other people are not likely to achieve. But at the same time, it is a disability. Like 100%. He is unable to do the sort of higher order things that other people do. It's just that he has chosen to focus on areas where he has strengths instead of areas that he has weaknesses. But it was great to see that because it is revealed for the first time in the movie, really, that he has this anxiety about his intelligence. Like the movie tells us that he knows that he's dumb, but it's almost like he's too dumb to let that bother him.
Yeah.
But clearly there is an anxiety there about him being too dumb to do stuff in life. And we see that in that scene where he is worried about his son having the same effect. And that's why it's beautiful.
Great moment.
That was a great cast, too, for Haley Joel Osment.
Love him. Apparently they saw him in like a Pizza Hut commercial for like 2 seconds. And they were like, that kid!
So cute, but he also has this like
he's got
old soul aspect to him.
Intelligence.
When he enunciates all of his words, it's like he's got sharp R's.
I love you too, Daddy.
Yeah. I love you too, Daddy. Yeah.
He sounds like he's 30 coming.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Kids do not talk like this and enunciate everything perfectly.
You're Paula Harris and I'm Forrest Gump.
Dude's making a comeback. He was like in The Boys. He was in Silicon Valley.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Were you listing things that made you cry?
Yeah, that's
he
it.
Did it all four times.
One thing that made me cry was I teared up when Jenny comes home. His mom dies and then he's like living in the house by himself and she comes home and he's like, that's another thing. He's mowing the lawn and he sees her walking up. He just stops. Every time something grabs his attention, he just like immediately stops what he's doing.
Single threaded.
And just like it has his full attention.
One core.
Yeah, he's a single thread processor. But I cried when he's like, Jenny showed up and she slept. She just slept and slept like she hadn't slept in a long time. And I was like, because I don't know. I feel like it's like she's the prodigal daughter. And he has this unconditional love, and he's just waiting for her. Every single time there's an opportunity for him to show his love to her, he does. But she always says, no, 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 no. Yeah. And she goes off and does her own thing. And then when she really, really needs it, she comes home, and he has that support, and she just sleeps. And she just has the freedom and peace of mind to just sleep for hours.
Like, I was like, how is this possibly moving you? And now I understand.
Well, it's because that support is there. It's that, like, you can go out and do whatever you want in the world, and your family or your love or whatever, your relationships that you choose, whether
she
it's
she was
that,
finally safe.
Yeah.
She was, well, until she decided she'd take off again. But, like...
But in that moment that moved you.
Yes, she was safe and because he was there for her.
Unconditional.
Okay.
Yeah. Unconditional love. It was great.
As a kid watching this, I never clued in that he jizzed in his pants.
Yeah, same. I knew before this watch, but
wait, when?
In
when
her dorm room.
Her boob,
in her
and he's like, oh.
Okay, guys. All right, hold on.
You never knew.
No,
yet.
I actually. Okay, wait.
You just.
I wouldn't
pants.
Have fast forwarded. I fast forwarded because we were watching it with. Listen,
you always do this.
We were watching it. I don't ever do this, but it was just this one time we were watching it with McLean because like we were trying to put McLean to bed, and I was like, I don't want to be watching this till 1 a.m. So like, I was feeding him his bottle. And I'm like, okay, I'll put Forrest Gump on. And it was that scene. And Lauren's like, he shouldn't see that. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to fast. I don't look. It was just
like
it was just a better safe than sorry situation. Sure. I hadn't seen the scene. I didn't know what was going to happen. I know he's won. It's like probably fine. Look,
dude, my house.
Look, get at me in the comments. Whatever. I'm just saying it was unfortunate. Exactly. I'll go back and watch it for you. Okay.
Dude, Red just watched Squid Game earlier this year. It's just like people's blood squirting out. She's like, Red. She has no idea. Oh my God. He doesn't know what the hell it is.
Okay.
Me and James can reenact it.
Are you going to stop that at some point?
You got it now, yeah. She swears and shit now. Oh, yeah. It's getting stupid.
He's nonverbal, so I just don't know what he's getting.
Oh, yeah. He knows everything. Yeah.
He's not nonverbal. He makes sounds. He makes animal noises. You say.
Just dissing Riley.
Oh, God.
No.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, he just in his pants anyways. And then he says something like, I think I ruined your roommate's robe. And then it shows the roommate's face.
Yeah.
Like,
oh.
Staring. And then Jenny's like, yeah, I don't really like her anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So we have some good jokes. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I laugh.
Dude, there's a part. This is a total hit pick for me.
The whole movie was hilarious.
When he's pushing the lieutenant down in the wheelchair in New York, and there's a cab, and Dan like slaps the cab. He goes, I'm walking here.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
So that's a reference to Taxi Driver?
No.
That's just New York in life.
I've always been confused about whether every single time that happens
reference. It's a specific movie. Midnight Cowboy. It's like an improvised thing by Dustin Hoffman. And then he hits it. He almost hits him and he whacks and he's like, I'm walking here.
Wait, but does this not happen in Taxi Driver?
No.
I don't know.
Cowboy is before, isn't
Dustin
it?
Dustin Hoffman. Rain Man.
Rain Man.
Mm. Rain Man, based on Kim Peeks, real life person.
Kim Peeks? Peeks? Peeking through the window.
Oh, no. Kim Peeks. Jizzing in your pants in the dorm room.
It doesn't even happen in Taxi Driver.
It's not. Yeah, what are you
talking
about?
That's all you, buddy.
No. My lore is way off. I thought that I got confused.
Give your head cannon a shake.
I'm sleepy.
Can we talk about how good the soundtrack is? It's bonkers. Like this, I don't know how much they spent. I couldn't find it, but like there's like 30, 35 songs that are probably each like a few hundred thousand dollars just
to license
for that few seconds they use them. And like there's scenes where it's like a 40-second like narration, and they switch songs three times. And I'm like, are you trying to spend money? Like, are you trying to make this as expensive
My
as
entire
possible?
Idea of the vibe of Vietnam is based on this movie and the soundtrack.
Totally.
Yeah. Like John Fogerty singing in the crap.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of classic trash.
I watched this a million times as like a 6-year-old. So you know what? I probably all of my like anti-racist views probably stem from this movie too.
What do you mean?
Because I was so young when I watched this, it's formative for me that like he never cared about being friends with Bubba. He didn't see color.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an interesting little. Well, they do a lot of things of him just kind of like moving through history and like being somewhat involved in these important like events in American history throughout the like the 60s and 70s, but. I don't know why. Do you understand? Did you guys, does that make sense to you? Why
like,
they're doing this?
Why he has to be at these like, key moments?
Yeah. Why? Is it just kind of like a meme? Like,
I think it's fun. A titillating part of the premise.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine there was just an idiot like at all these key moments in history.
And but then, like, is it that it's an idiot or is it that like, oh, he has this magical quality and so great that, you know, the whole of the country was changed by his enduring spirit.
I think it's just like when the person wrote the book, they were just like, what would be the most fun thing that could happen? Like in the book, he goes to the moon.
No.
Yeah, he has like an orangutan buddy. Like it's like more
it's Apollo
goofy.
13.
Yeah.
Before Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Until you said that now, I didn't even know there was a book. I didn't know this was
we
an
talked about we talked it. About the author of the book earlier.
I thought you were talking about the Dune. Other. Yeah, I thought. Well, no, I thought you were talking about a different book.
But yeah, so the book
I'm
is
out of it. Today.
Apparently, the book sucks. Like people that have read it are like, actually, this sucks. I've never read it, but they took the feeling and the idea and made something totally new. And I think they made good choices. And I think, like you said, James, it's part of the formula of what works. Is like this. Oh, he was everywhere. And it's fun, like, oh, there's John Lennon. Oh, he inspired John Lennon's song. I hate, though, that's a big nitpick. I hate that fucking scene.
I know. No religion, no possessions, or no possessions, no religion too. Oh, like, that's the lyrics of the song. Yeah.
I do like the Elvis one better. I think that's a little
that one was fun.
Funny. And, like, they don't show the face, so there's no CG mouth.
Yeah,
I enjoy that.
You know what aspect of his character that is kind of really subtle and interesting is when he's at the grave at the end, and he has the letter that young Forrest, little Forrest wrote, and he says he didn't want me to read it, and he puts it on the grave. He never read it.
Yeah.
He really never read it.
Yeah.
And I feel like do I want to say the word most? Many parents
oh, for sure.
Would read it.
I would read
yeah,
it.
Yeah, probably.
You totally read it.
Yeah.
But he actually just honored that.
Yeah.
That's the thing about him, you know? It's like everyone else has this, like, curiosity that they can't overcome sometimes, you know?
We have a lot to learn.
It's a good, like, because, like, that's one of humans' greatest strengths, is this higher-order thought that, like, you know what? I need to know, and then, like, we discover more things that we wouldn't have otherwise. Like, if everyone was Forrest Gump, the world wouldn't be as advanced or, you know, I don't know. What, yeah. You could make an argument that society would be worse off. You could also make an argument that we would be better off.
We'd be happy,
like,
Riley.
But the fact that all this infrastructure is here, this society exists, and it's become sort of cynical and it's become sort of, like, depressed, he can come through and, like, have this, like, purity to it. And, you know, he's unburdened by the curiosity of, like, what's in the letter. I was told not to read it, so I won't.
You know what else is weird about this movie? I watched it on Plex. You know, it shows the cast before you press play. It shows Robin Wright. I'm like, that badass bitch from Blade Runner?
Oh, yeah.
He's in this movie? Where? And then I'm like, holy! She's Jenny! That's crazy!
Apparently, she, like, showed up and did the audition and, like, got the job on the spot. Like, there was no hesitation. She was just the right person.
Great singer, too.
Do you think that's actually her singing?
Why not?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, lots of actors are talented.
It seemed like her same timbre.
You never know how to say that word, hey.
Timbre.
Tamba.
It's because we live in Canada and we have all this French everywhere.
Tambre.
David, get it out of here.
Give it to us.
What?
I thought you wanted to hear him say it.
No, I'm telling him to get the French out of here.
Get the French out!
Do you guys know that the studio didn't want to give them the full budget? They originally got approved for $55 million, and then they kind of like were like, actually, no. And then so Robert Zemeckis and Tom Hanks took a cut on their paycheck so that they could fill in the gap. And then at some point they were running out of money, and they just started funding it themselves.
Wow.
They put the money. They really did believe in this movie, and they just like started paying for it themselves.
Maybe the execs saw like an early scene where Hanks hadn't got the voice down yet, and they were like... Yikes! Yeah. I'm out of here.
Yeah, they had to film. They had run out of budget, so they had to film the running scenes in secret. So they had someone from the studio that was there to help keep the budget under. But she kind of like switched sides and helped them keep it hidden. Mm. And so they filmed all these scenes where they were flying to two states in a day, and it was just like a very small crew. And then eventually the studio found out about it. But at that point, they saw enough of the movie that they believed, and they're like, okay, yeah, we can do this.
Hey, what do you guys think about the segment where he's running anyway for like 3 years there?
It's interesting. I feel like it's like emblematic of him, where it's just like he just gets a goal and he does it, and he can't stop him until he doesn't want to do
it. He does it because that's right after Jenny leaves, right? So he has to, I feel like it took him 3 years to process what happened. Really?
I like that idea, yeah.
Because that's the most complex thing that's ever happened to him.
Yeah.
She finally comes back. She finally... they make love, mm-hmm. the most connection ever, and then she just leaves. And why? And that's when he just goes and runs for three years to think about it.
He's running the whole time, and the gears are just turning. That's such a funny idea.
What else is
it? No, I think that's exactly why. I mean, like, I refrained from putting that in the synopsis, the like causal link there, because he says he started running for no reason at all. And the movie kind of makes it seem as if he's running for no reason at all.
But
I think it's clear that, like, okay, he starts running because that happened to him. And he needs, like, he needs to do something.
He has no goal in his life at that point either.
Yeah. At that point, you know, he's not in the army. He's a millionaire. What does he need to do? He doesn't need to work. So he's just kind of like, I feel like running. And he just never stops because nothing else grabs his
attention. And maybe in his own simple way, running is, like, reminiscent of his moments with Jenny. Because, like, the first time he starts running is, like, Jenny being like, run for us, run for us. And so maybe...
He's like, I'm doing what you told me to do.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, that's how I keep Jenny.
I think that's how he transcends into like this like higher plane, because his mind is already clear.
Clear
as fuck.
He has essence of the divine.
And then when he runs, like most people like clear their head when they're working out.
Yeah.
That's just insane.
Well, his head's already.
What do they call it? What's the weather condition that pilots talk about? It's called, on 9/11, the sky was, it's like called super clear or like
we're
crazy.
We're headed into some chop.
What the hell? Okay, you guys talk about other stuff. I got to find this.
The running scene is interesting to me. There's a few moments of the like eye rolling, how he's influenced history, like the fucking smiley face. And the shit happens was okay.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
But then, the smiley
severe face. Clear.
Severe
clear. Clear.
That's a good name for
Isn't
a band.
Isn't that a sick?
That's a, yeah, that'd that's be good a band name.
Sick combination
severe
of words.
Severe clear!
Get the fuck up! Yeah!
It's like a high school band name.
Yeah.
So you'd have to change that once you
get he'd be savant clear.
Yeah, I thought it was nice because, okay, that's the impetus, right? Like, she takes off, and so that's why he starts running. But I thought that whole scene was, like, less about him and more about kind of, like, the way that humans react to things that they don't understand. Because they're like, why is he running? Are you running for the environment? Are you running for animal rights? Are you running for LGBT, blah, blah, blah? And he's just kind of like, he doesn't, does he even, he's like, I just felt like it. Does he even say something when all those reporters are asking him?
No, he's like, I just started running.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like, but then just because of his, like, of the mystery of it, they're like, what is it? What's he doing? Why is he doing this?
People just
start following him. And he, like, becomes like a cult leader without even realizing. Well,
this fucking smiley face t-shirt.
So dumb.
Yeah. We already talked about that, James. You were gone. Yeah, he becomes like this cult leader, like, unintentionally.
Yeah,
and then when he stops, everyone's like, oh, he's going to say something. Like, they're looking for something from him. Like, the way that humans tend to impose what they want to see or impose, like,
project.
Yeah, some sort of meaning or purpose onto something that might just be happening for no reason. He's just,
yeah,
like, he's just running.
A pattern in the chaos.
Yeah,
the ghost in the machine.
Yeah. I think it was maybe like a comment on how people tend to follow people, how people kind of fall into these cult-like situations.
Well, we're always looking for meaning.
Or tribes.
And there's an icon of who seemingly has it all together.
Yeah.
Like, even the first person that follows him, he's like, you know, I just saw someone, like, there who just had it all together. And it's like, what?
I mean, he sort of does, but in other ways,
severe clear.
Yeah. Severe clear,
buddy. Do they only have sex one time? Because...
Yeah,
when she comes back, she has HIV or AIDS.
I guess that's implied that they don't have sex again?
Yeah.
Man, he had a chance of getting AIDS there.
Well, wait, did you say that earlier in the podcast, too? That, like, did she have... Or no, I think Lauren said that. She's like, wait, so did she have HIV when they had sex?
I don't know.
That's unclear. I mean, HIV entered
the
'70s. So it could be that virus. She says she has a virus.
I read somewhere that it's like it's implied that that's what it is. Like, she calls it a virus, and then it kills her, and it's like,
and they don't know what it is yet. So it didn't. Mm. It was in the '80s that there was more like recognition about HIV/AIDS.
Yeah.
So that all checks out. As to whether or not she contacted it before
or after,
It's probably after. I mean, I don't know.
It doesn't really matter. He doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. But that was kind of interesting, though, because it's like, oh, he finally gets to sleep with Jenny. Never again. He just needed the one time. He's Forrest Gump.
He couldn't handle anymore.
Forrest Hump.
Well, that's all I have to hump about that. Bill Clinton's back.
Do you guys like the framing device of him being on the bench talking to people, like narrating the story? Because it does that thing where it's like, the unwilling audience that slowly gets won over, and then at the end, they're like, there's going to be the character who's like, don't stop, tell me more!
Yeah.
Do you guys like that whole framing device, because it sort of justifies the narration, which I think the movie needs, or do you think that it's cheesy?
I feel like it's, you know, it's this movie is cheesy.
Yeah.
It's capital C cheesy. And I think because it's so earnest with
capital
its cheesiness...
E's, by what? The way. Capital E.
Cheesy!
Sorry.
Young Cheesy, that's my rap name. I feel like because it's so cheesy and so earnest with what it's doing, it totally works. And in another movie, it'd be like, oh. Okay.
I think it works. That first check is just, even like 20 minutes into it, she's still reading her magazine.
Yeah,
she doesn't give a shit. She's like, go get away from me.
Yeah.
That old lady, though, I like how it turns to be, he never gets on the bus.
Yeah.
She's like, it's right there. That part's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, he's like, isn't this your bus? And she's like, another one will be around shortly. Yeah.
I like when he gives Jenny the chocolates and he's like, ate his favorite ones out of there.
I ate some of them. And she's just like, classic fucking Forrest.
Like,
give me some.
Doesn't even know that I'm lactose intolerant. Always about you,
bless
Forrest.
Your heart. Yeah. One of my favorite lines from the movie is he's like, I love you, Jenny. And she's like, Forrest, you don't know what love is.
That is one of the
and
best things.
It's themes. Like, it's obviously, they make it explicit later, but even in that moment, it's very clear. It's like, he knows what
love is. Yeah.
He's the only one who knows what love is. Okay, Jenny?
All mammals do.
Get in the car. We're going home.
They have the same limbic brain. No, but that's really a big part of their relationship the way she views him. Like, he's nice and he's my friend and I love him, but he could never be my partner. Because, you know.
Which is interesting because it's like, I don't fault her for thinking that. You know, like, obviously she thinks that.
Sure.
Anyone would think, like, I can't be your partner. You have an IQ of 75. Like, you should be a ward of the state. You know, it's like the fact that he was able to succeed. That's not true. at 75. There's people out there. It's fine.
But don't you have to? I think it's like 87 to be able to get into the army.
Hold it's on. A very low IQ. I'm just saying that like it obviously makes sense for someone to, you know, especially someone with like standard intelligence, to look at someone who is like clearly I don't know what you call it. What's the right term for it now?
Adult with intellectual disability?
Sure. And she's like, "Oh, we can't be on an equal playing field as partners, you know, in a lifelong relationship."
But she's an activist and stuff. She was hanging out with, but at the same time,
you know, what she's looking for is probably like a capable man with a brain who can provide and like be like capable of having adult discussions about finances or whatever, you know, like things that like are complex.
Well, I think you see one of her partners is that communist guy at the Black Panther.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
Like that's what her partner, right. But she thinks she wants.
Yeah. But I think that like him becoming financially stable, I find it like not only financially stable, but like he doesn't have to worry about money for the rest of his life. I think it honestly,
and
like,
have you seen him cut the grass? Unreal.
So
like, could they be together and have like a fulfilling relationship, even if they weren't, you know, if they didn't come into money or something? Like, yes, 100%. But I'm just saying, I don't blame her for not being with him until it's like obvious that she should.
Well, and I think it's not a traditional relationship in the sense that they're equally yoked. It's
right.
She needs someone to take care of her, and he wants to take care of
That's
her.
That's a real Christianese phrase you just used.
Hell yeah.
You mean jacked, right?
Yeah.
Until he's yoked.
They're both
until they're equally
yoked.
YOLK.
So it's not like a traditional romance where like the movie gives us a little bit of that, but really it is something that they both want, and or both Forrest wants and she needs.
Right.
And it's really not romantic in the same way that I think we're used to. So I think
interesting. That makes it good to watch.
Yeah, exactly. I do like that.
That's good watching.
I do like it.
The minimum IQ for the U.S. Army, I think it would never had an actual number. It used to be 10th percentile, which was 81. Nowadays, you just need to get a certain score on the like test.
I thought that was an interesting choice that the movie gave us a specific number. I think today they would just like imply that he's like got a specific
hand wavy.
Yeah, exactly. But they give us 74 or whatever.
Well, I think they wanted to really show us that graph that the principal has, where they're like, he's almost enough to go to school. They really wanted to
narrow
it down for us.
I just had this thought now. Maybe this is like an interesting reversal of the way that maybe like a traditional patriarchal type of man views women. It's like their intelligence doesn't matter. Like, just want them to be hot or whatever. Like, like nowadays, I think the idea of a relationship is a lot more as like you're equal partners, right? They're the same. They're equal under the law, blah, blah, blah. But in antiquity, it was more like the men are the ones who are powerful and smart and have all the power. And the women are just kind of like, they're more like cattle, you know, like the things
the
that they, you own them.
Yeah.
And they provide a
you
service.
You haven't traveled much, have you?
Wait, what?
Saying that other parts of the world.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, okay. I'm talking about Western culture primarily. Women's value to men in the past wasn't as like intellectuals. It wasn't like if they were dumb, it didn't matter as long as they did what were expected to do. But in this one, it's kind of like it's reversed where she has the brains and he doesn't. He has the heart.
Yeah.
But it's like she's reluctant to go with him because it doesn't conform to that kind of traditional idea of a man and a woman being together, especially back then. I don't know.
But he has the money and the strength.
He has the money. And that's why I'm saying later it's like a lot less of an issue where, you know, you can see her kind of beginning to break down her boundaries there or her whatever inhibitions a little bit because she's like, well, he has a house, he has money, he cares about me, he loves me, he
has
can clearly
hammer,
provide
absolute hammer. You know that.
Yeah, so then it's like, okay, well, that takes away a lot of the reasons for you to be hesitant about being with him, but she still is like, I'm looking
maybe
for this.
She's questioning her own morals because she's like, I could so easily take advantage of this millionaire.
Yeah.
It'd be so easy.
Oh, maybe.
Household name?
Forrest Gump.
No, Bubblegum Shrimp.
Oh,
household
sure.
name.
But he was also a ping pong legend.
I've been to the airport. I've been to the restaurant.
It's kind of funny how... I've been to the restaurant.
I actually want to go. Never
License
been.
Plates it, on the wall, you know?
Yeah, it's fun.
Oh, I love that kind of place.
It's fun.
I don't like shrimp that much. I'm not a big fan of shrimp. They're the cockroach of the sea.
What?
They're like bottom feeders. They eat garbage.
Who cares?
They're
it gross. Tastes good.
What? You don't eat rats? Same thing.
Are you going to be against eating insects when they're our only food source?
I actually think like
because we destroyed.
I think crickets are less gross than shrimp. Shrimp like I'll eat them, but there's something like weird about them.
You know what's messed up?
Very alien.
The fact that they have these lines, you can see the lines on their body and they're filled with poop.
Yeah, but you can take those out.
They have a carapace.
I don't take them out.
I go, that's why you first, baby. Yeah, I think any of the carapace, weird. If you eat the if you pull out the insides of the carapace.
Got minerals.
Yeah, I would eat crickets, no problem. I eat shrimp. I eat shrimp, guys. I had popcorn shrimp this weekend.
I hung out with Detlef
shrimp. Popcorn shrimp. Shrimp salad. Yeah, we got to get out of here. I think we've done it.
We tried to pad out this episode, I feel like, at the end
a little bit.
We
didn't have to.
We didn't. No.
I love you guys.
One nitpick, though, when he's talking about his friends in the platoon in Vietnam, and he's like, they're some of the finest men in the country or whatever. There was Dallas from Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Cleveland from Detroit. Yeah. And Tex. Where was Tex from?
Yeah.
That's not a nitpick. That's funny.
I said hit pick.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I love the way they do it, too, because he gives the two names, and then it's showing whatever, Dallas or whatever, and he's like, hey, Tex.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I guess that's all we're going to get. And then they reveal what he says, and it's just the timing of it is so good. Love it.
Okay, wait, did he get it wrong then, or what?
What do you mean?
Dallas from Phoenix, like, is Dallas from Texas?
No, I think that it's like those are their names and that's where they're from.
Wait, really?
I thought, yeah.
Does it make more sense that Dallas is from Texas?
No, that would be stupid. Who? What Texan is going to name their own kid Dallas?
Cleveland from Detroit. What state is Cleveland in?
Detroit, Michigan.
Cleveland.
Detroit, Michigan, but there's, But where's Cleveland?
Ohio. Drew Carey, baby.
Phoenix, and is Tex from Arizona?
Who knows?
Because we don't know.
He's from Tex-Mex.
If you haven't turned the podcast off by now, what are you doing?
Do so now. Next week, we're going to do Uncharted. Is it Uncharted?
Uncharted.
No one booked this ahead of time. This is Uncharted.
The boat's just going.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.